WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
British writer Julian Barnes captured American readers 2 years ago with the publication of his novel Flaubert's Parrot. Critics praised Barnes for his imaginative blending of fiction, biography, and literature. Barnes was working as a TV critic when Flaubert's Parrot was published here. His two previous novels, Metroland and Before She Met, are now available in this country. But fans will have to wait for his crime stories, written under the pen name Dan Kavanaugh, to appear in American bookstores. Barnes' new book is called Staring at the Sun. This novel follows the life of a young woman, beginning in 1921 and ending 100 years later.
This excerpt comes from the early part of the book, where the heroine, Jean Sargent, is a naive young woman about to get married. And one of the wiser women of the village has given her a book on sexology to break the news to her gently. The first night, she leafed through the book carelessly, skipping whole chapters called Sleep, Children, Society, and Appendix. If she did this, it didn't really count as reading. Even so, phrases dropped from the page and stuck like burrs to her flannelette nightdress. Some of them made her laugh. Some of them made her apprehensive. The word turgid kept appearing, and so did crisis. She didn't like the sound of those two. Enlarged and stiffened, she read. Lubricated by mucus. Turgid again. Soft, small, and drooping. Ugh. Maladjustment of the relative shapes and positions of the organs. Partial absorption of the man's secretions, congestion of the womb. She was astonished by how often the word sex seemed to be married to some other word, sex attraction, sex ignorance, sex tide, sex life, sex function. Lots of hyphens everywhere. Sex hyphens, she thought. She tried hard, but couldn't understand a lot of what was being said. The author made great claims to write plainly and straightforwardly, but Jean got lost almost at once. Soul structures, she read, and the rift within the lute, which he didn't much want to think about. The clitoris corresponds morphologically to the man's penis. What could that mean?
Julian Barnes, I think that's a very funny example of an issue which you seem to be pretty obsessed with, which is that language doesn't always do what it's supposed to do. It doesn't always describe well what it means to.
That's right. It's interesting that a lot of readers of this book have assumed that I made up this false and misleading language. In fact, the interesting and ironic thing is that it's all direct quotations from the most famous book in our country, which was of the sort that was given to young wives. It was called Married Love, and it was by Mary Stopes, who was very famous in our country. I don't know if she's known in yours. And it's ironic because at the time, this was considered the most plain-speaking book available. And it was, women read this, you see, and they read all this stuff, and they thought, that's what it's really like. And then two generations, or perhaps half a generation on, you read it, and it seems opaque and mysterious. And you can't understand how they got anything right after reading this book.
In your novels, you seem to really take great joy both in wonderful writing and in very funny or very inspired flourishes, but also you seem to really get a kick out of bad writing. I mean, you quote
other people's bad writing.
Other people's bad writing.
Let's get this straight.
No. That's right. If it was your own bad writing, it would be a little enjoyment to be had. No, but in Flaubert's Parrot and in your new book, Staring at the Sun, there are several passages where you're quoting somebody else's bad writing, and it's really very funny, and I know that as the writer, you're really enjoying it yourself.
Yes, that's true. I mean, I was very attracted actually by this bad writing in this book of sexology, because, I mean, there's a lot of bad writing which doesn't really mislead or misleads about unimportant things or low levels of experience, but there's something that seems to me not just funny but deeply poignant about the idea of someone not knowing anything about sex and trying to learn it from books which use words like, you know, lubricated by mucus. You know, that sounds like something pretty nasty.
I have a feeling you have a real love-hate relationship with words.
Oh, I don't know where you get the idea of the hate part of it. I mean, I have a love relationship with words. One of my earliest jobs was as a lexicographer on the Oxford English Dictionary.
Really?
Yes, I worked there for 3 years. So I suppose I'm particularly skilled in words beginning with letters A to G, which came into our language between 1880 and 1975, but I don't think it shows in my prose.
Well, I'll tell you why I thought you might hate language as well as love it.
Yes.
First of all, your main character at one point talks, I forget exactly what the quote is, but she says sometimes she gets fed up with words.
Yes.
And one of your great literary idols, I don't know if that's too strong a word, is Flaubert, who was obsessed with words and with le mot juste, with the right word, and I think that could be
that's
torture
true.
As well as
yes, I
fulfilling.
See what you mean. I mean, if you're obsessed with using words as precisely and perfectly as you can, then at some point you're bound to sort of butt up against the sort of the extremities of the use of words. You know that at some point words don't cover the whole of experience.
You seem to be interested in riddles and hypotheses and unanswerable questions. There's a lot of those in your new book.
In the new book there is, and indeed it was originally called Question and Answer. One diligent critic in England counted up the number of question marks there were in the book. And I think he
How
came
many
to
were say, there?
Well, I think he came to say 500 or 600, but I haven't done the count myself.
It's so an interesting form of literary criticism.
That's right, yes. I think he probably just tried it for about 20 pages and then he multiplied by 10 or something like that. But it makes a fair point.
You devote more than a couple of pages to answers to the question, is there a God?
Yes, that's right. Towards the end of the book, the son of the questioning Jean Sargent gets obsessed by. We've now moved forward to the next century, and he gets obsessed by the question of whether God exists or not, and so he sets out a sort of series of hypotheses.
Would you read a few?
Yes, sure. Well, we start with the two obvious ones. One, that God exists. Two, that God does not exist. Three, that God used to exist, but doesn't anymore. Four, that God does exist, but that he's abandoned us. A, because we've been a severe disappointment to him, or B, because he gets bored easily. Five, that God did exist, doesn't exist at the moment, but will exist again in the future. He's merely taking a divine sabbatical at the moment. This will explain a lot. Six, that God hasn't existed so far at all, but will exist in the future. He will arrive at some point to clear away our garbage, trim the grass in the public parks, and gentrify the neighbourhood. God is an overworked maintenance man in a stained boiler suit, with far too many planets to look after. We should consider paying more and having a regular maintenance contract, instead of calling him out on an emergency basis, as we do now. And one more, if we've got time for it. That there are several gods. This might explain a lot. A, they might always be quarrelling, and so no one is minding the shop. B, they might be paralysed by an excess of democracy, like the United Nations. Each god has a veto, and so nothing gets past the Security Council. Small wonder that our planet is derelict. C, this subdivision of responsibility has weakened their strength and weakened their concentration. They might be able to see what is going wrong and yet do nothing about it. Perhaps the gods are benign but powerless. Perhaps they can merely look on like eunuchs in a harem.
How did you come up with those answers to the question, does God exist?
Well, I just sat down and thought of them, actually. I mean, I think so. I mean, I certainly didn't go reading through religious philosophy and so on to find examples. I think I got one of them from a pamphlet on heresy or something like that I did look up. I ran them through a friend of mine who's a philosopher to see if he could come up with any more possibilities, but he couldn't add any to them. It's a game, but it's a serious game when you do something like that. And it's the sort of bursts of writing that I like doing very much.
Okay. Julian Barnes, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Julian Barnes' new novel is titled Staring at the Sun.